Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
105 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show for a Friday. Hope you're doing great. Also, in case I forget to tell you, have a great weekend. Jimmy Wayne is a guy who has had a whole lot of success in country music, but it was quite the journey to get there, and Jimmy Wayne is my guest here for this segment. Jimmy, very much appreciate you calling in today. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, yes, you are a country music star, but one of the other things that I love about what you're doing is you're trying to help kids, and you're trying to help foster kids. But I want to get to your story first, because a lot of folks know your music, but I don't know if a lot of folks know the journey that you have been on. So I've been hearing your music for a long time, but I did never really know really the story behind the music. And it is an amazing story, from being abandoned by your mother on the side of the road at the age of, I think it was 13 years old, to where you are today, which is a successful country musician. I want to talk about that journey, because I think a lot of folks can learn from your journey and learn from your experiences. So I want to talk first off about the story of your mom. At the age of 13 years old, she literally abandoned you on the side of the road. First of all, where was this?
It was in Pensacola, Florida. My mom had just gotten out of prison, and it was her second time in maximum security prison. When she got out, she married a man. He committed a crime, and he took me and my mom with him on this long run from the law. We lived in a car at rest areas, and you know, we traveled from North Carolina to Oklahoma City, down to Texas, and back to Pensacola, Florida. And while we were in that area, I don't know, because I'd never even been out of my little town back in North Carolina. And it was actually my stepdad who made me get out of the car. And, of course, you know, my mom kissed me on the face and got back in the car, you know, as I was getting all my stuff out of the trunk. She kissed me on the face and got back in the car, and together they drove away, and they didn't come back. So I had to figure it out. But I can tell you, the only way I survived that is because I developed a work ethic when I was a kid, when I was younger than 13. I was 10 years old when I started manually working. So I always make sure I preach that to every school I visit today, to every church, to every venue. We have to make our kids work. They have to develop a work ethic. So that's what helped me survive and also helped me get to where I'm at today. Inevitably, I was picked up by the police, and I spent the next 3 years in the foster care system and moved around quite a bit until I migrated out when I was 16. And now I'm living on the streets in North Carolina. But my life changed when I met an elderly couple in their mid-70s, B and Russell Kalsinger. Took me into their home, and it started when, you know, I just saw a doorway open on a wood shop, and I saw this old man standing there, and we went up to him and asked him if he had any work I could do, because I worked, and that's how I paid for my food. And I could have easily started dealing drugs, because everybody around me was. Could have easily started getting into crime and everything else, because everybody around me was.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose to work, and I made a conscious decision not to go down that road that my friends and foster brothers and everyone else was going down. And this lady, B. Costner, 75 years old, allowed me to cut their grass that afternoon. She brought me a Coca-Cola out to the fence, and she hired me to be their lawn boy for the remainder of that summer. And I was there every week on time, not 5 minutes late, but on time. And so you learn these things, you know, that help you survive. And being on time was important to me because I was hungry.
Well, you know, Jimmy, one of the things that they say is half of being successful in a career or a job is showing up on time. And
That's right. You
bring up a great point, which is there are so many people that will complain about how they're not doing well and they can't keep a job and everything else, but they have to look at their own on-time performance, their own attitude, and everything else. And I think the part of what I find amazing about your story is that, and I'm hearing you talk about your work ethic, is it all comes back down to, almost a toughness and a grittiness that I think that some people have and other people don't. And so when you started working at the age of 10, what was it that you were doing? You said that it was the manual labor that you started developing this work ethic. So my question is twofold. What was the kind of work you were doing, and who was making you do that work? At the age of 10, you were with your mom. Were you with a friend? You said your mom was in prison.
Well, first of all, I moved around a lot and lived with different families and individuals. But I was with my granddad, who was an old bootlegger, and he carried a gun in his pocket and sold white liquor. But he was always beating that word into my head: work. You have to work. You have to work. So he'd send me out to this golf course to pick golf balls up out of the bushes and creeks, and I would wipe them off and stand at the green out of their way. But as soon as they would putt, I'd say, golf ball, 25 cents. And and they would buy the golf balls from me. And then, of course, I would pick up aluminum cans in the on the side road, or I'd pick up limbs and trash out of someone's yard and ditch. I mean, I was just a worker. That's what I did. And then I ran grocery store orders for elderly people in the trailer park that we moved to, and I had a little list of clients, and I'd take their grocery store order, their money, walk to the grocery store at 12 years old, come back and give them their groceries, and they'd let me keep the change. So I was always a worker, always a hustler. I was always working, and that's how I got to where I'm at today, with the help of many wonderful school teachers. And that's why that Crystal franchise right now, Coca-Cola and I have partnered to commemorate a very special school teacher who inspired me and encouraged me to start writing, Miss Crystal Friday. And we've launched this campaign to commemorate her and to raise awareness for educators everywhere who are helping our kids, because these teachers are being so disrespected. And it's getting on my last nerve when I turn on the computer and see a kid fist fighting their teacher. I can't even tell you how mad and that makes. I want to kick that kid's ass. You know, it's like, you don't go to school beating up your school teacher.
Jimmy, you bring up a great point, which is when you go to YouTube, when you go to just look at some of these different websites, what we see happening in the classrooms today is abhorrent. And a lot of this is, I don't want to say it's due to, but it's exacerbated by social media, because what we've seen over the years, as all of the cell phones, all the smartphones now have cameras on them, is we see students who are challenging teachers, and they're baiting teachers to try and get these teachers to have some sort of a physical altercation with them for one of two reasons: so that they can get the teacher in trouble, or so that they can put it up on social media and there'll be social media stars that parents can then sue the school. They get a big payoff, and it's a whole thing. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So
I tell you what it comes back to. It goes back to their dads. Yeah. These kids need dads. They need dads in their life who will lay the law down, and who they're not afraid to speak up and discipline their kids. They're not afraid of the law is going to come get them if they yell at their kid. It's like, come on, folks, you got to start disciplining your kids. Make them work. If they work, they'll be too tired to fight. They'll be too tired to act up. Also, they'll be inspired to get some education, so they won't have to work that hard when they get older. Because we all know, when you work in a behind a grill flipping burgers, that's the last thing you want to do as your career. You're just like, man, I want to get out of here. I've done that. So we got to make them work, and that will inspire them to get their education. I wouldn't be where I'm at today had it not been for the work ethic, this family being Russell Costner, and, you know, these school teachers. I would not be where I'm at.
Well, what's interesting, too, is you're somebody who has had some very good success in country music. And despite that, but what you've done is you've really tried to give back. I mean, you did the Meet Me Halfway walk where you walked from Nashville to Phoenix, and you lived on the streets as you went. And what you were trying to do was you were trying to bring attention or awareness to the fact that when kids age out of the foster system, they're essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're essentially thrown out on the streets. What age does somebody age out of the foster system? And tell me what that is like.
A kid grows up in the foster care system. It's foster care, but it should be the system is overburdened. The individuals are overworked. The social care workers are overworked. I mean, their caseloads are 60-plus kids a month. It's unbelievable. And the thing about it is, if a kid could pay a tithe or if they were responsible enough to pay taxes, they would roll out the red carpet for these kids. But they can't pay a tithe to a church. They can't get a job and pay taxes. So they're not as important to society as the rich man, as the woman who is influential. So these kids, it goes as far back as the orphan train in the 1800s, when kids were transported on a train from the northeast, from New York City. 30,000 children were transported all along America and dropped off at train depots. These farmers and ranchers would pinch their skin to see how fat and muscular they were, and they'd pick those kids off the train to go work on their farms. Now, the skinny kids and the unhealthy kids migrated further west. Speaking of Billy the Kid, he was the first one, right? And we don't hear about these kids until they commit a crime like he did. He didn't start off being a bad person. He started off being a kid in a bad situation, homeless kid, an orphan. So he stole a pair of pants and some cheese and got in trouble. Next thing you know, he's a criminal. He shot some people and killed them. Well, guess what? That's what happens when you're a kid, when you're surviving, when you're trying to survive. And these kids are growing up in the system today. It hasn't gotten any better because in the 1920s, the government in the United States abolished the orphan train and they created this great system called the foster care system.
Right.
Well, it's been derailed since. It's been off track since.
Well, I know Tennessee has come under fire for some of the inadequacies of the foster care system in this state.
They should.
And I know they've been working diligently, although I don't know how diligently, but I guess they've met all of these goals now. I read a story the other day. But let me ask you this, Jimmy Wayne. In a perfect world, for these kids that are getting out of the foster care system at, I believe you said, the age of 16 years old. 18 years old. In a perfect world, what could we do to help these kids adjust to life outside of the foster system so that they can support themselves and they're not supported by taxpayers?
Two things. We have to extend foster care to age 21.
Okay.
Well, you say, well, that's a burden on the taxpayers. It's not. There's a $2 return on every dollar invested. Every dollar invested, there's a $2 return. If we extend foster care, because if we let them out now at 18 years young, they ended up becoming one out of four end up in prison within 2 years. 50% of the females end up pregnant within the first year. So the problem isn't solved by letting them age out at 18. The problem is helped by extending foster care to age 21 and giving them the minimum resources to transition into adulthood, to get some basic education, some college, and let them become productive citizens instead of criminals and homeless people. And so we can help them by extending foster care. Now, we can help them greatly if we just take an initiative like B and Russell did with me. They were in their 70s, and they took a 16-year-old long-haired kid into their home, gave him a place to stay. And the key thing was Russell was a World War II veteran. He didn't take any crap off anyone, especially me. He laid the law down. This is what you're going to do. And if you don't do it, you're leaving. You're going to leave. And so I knew there was not going to be a second chance with him. There was just something about him. He was a military man. When he said it, he meant it the first time. If you screwed up, you were out of there. And so I did what he told me to do.
Well, Jimmy, you're right, and that dovetails back to what you said earlier, which is you look back and you look at some of these communities where crime is rampant, the dropout rate, the high pregnancy rate, and the commonality is always fatherless households. And so
yes.
I 100% agree with you. Now, you've got a big night tonight because it is your 200th appearance at the Grand Ole Opry. So to go from a homeless kid to playing at the Opry, that is an amazing journey. And these days, you do continue with the music. And you are part of this campaign that you talked about earlier. And fans can buy a Coke and they can download your song, I Love You This Much, and you can have that on the Coke can or on the bottle of Coke as well. What is this all about, and how can folks get more information?
Well, Coca-Cola decided to put my song, I Love You This Much, on their product, their bottles and cans. And I'm telling you, it's just unbelievable. But people can Shazam. You can get the app on your phone. Shazam, the little thing on the icon on the bottle or can, takes you to my song. And that's where you can hear the song and download it.
Jimmy, what is the song about? We're gonna play a couple of seconds of the song just for folks who may not be familiar with the song. I'm gonna ask you what the song is about because I know the song has some pretty deep meaning. So here's a part of the song. Go ahead, Craig.
I love you this much, and I'm waiting on you to make up your mind. Do you love me too?
Jimmy, what is that song about?
The song was inspired by my relationship with my biological dad, or lack of, and I wanted to write a song that just, you know, that kind of helped me get, because that's what I do, write songs, write books. Mm-hmm. It helps me. It's a therapeutic exercise. It was inspired by, I was encouraged to write by my sixth grade teacher, so it goes back to her. But this song, I Love You This Much, is about, even though my biological dad was never a part of my life, the ultimate dad was. The greater dad, the Christ. And, you know, when his arms are stretched out on that cross saying, you know, I love you this much. I love you enough to die for your sins. Mm. You know, and the fact that Coca-Cola has printed that on their product blows me away. Honestly, it does. But the Share a Coke campaign is to share songs, not just one particular genre or style, whatever. It's to share a song. Share a Coke and share a song. And I'm just blown away because Coca-Cola has played such a major role in my life. You know, when Bea Costner used to give me that Coca-Cola every week, I'd cut her grass. That's how she befriended me. And inevitably, I moved into their home, was allowed to go to school, college, pursue and catch my dream, and then write that song, I Love You This Much, and turn right around and they print it on the product.
Let's not forget, though, Jimmy, and I really love how you're giving a lot of love to Bea. Let's not forget, though, that she saw something in you, that she saw that you had a lot to offer and you had a lot of potential. So while I love that you give a lot of credit to Bea, let's not forget that you also played a big part in that because you showed her something. Whatever it was, you went from being on the streets to randomly knocking on her door and changing not only your life but her life as well.
And you worked, and
through this campaign, you're gonna change a whole lot of other lives as well.
Well, that's what I did. That's what I did.
Yeah,
I worked. She saw me working, and she, you know, come to find out after she had passed away, I learned that she had taken in many children throughout her adult life. She and her husband had helped many kids. Hmm. There was a calendar hanging on her bedroom door, and you flip through it, and every month she had donated to some charity in America that helps kids. I mean, this family helped people. I was just one of many. So she saw that in me. She saw that I worked. I wasn't a lazy kid. I worked. We have to make our kids work.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you know, through the work of Bea Costner, who helped you, now you are turning around, and through various efforts, you are doing everything that you can to help others. And so it's one of those things where it's a sort of a chain reaction where somebody helped you, now you're helping others, and then the people that you help will inevitably, hopefully anyway, turn around and pass along.
Talk about the book. The book, three-time New York Times bestseller.
Okay,
so. Gotta point that out.
Let's talk about the book very quickly. What the book is called Walk the Beautiful. Walk Too Beautiful.
Yes. Has been on the New York Times list three times. I wrote it with the most amazing master writer, Ken Abraham. And this book tells the story of my childhood. It talks about the Bea and Russell Costner family. And everything I spoke about right now is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it really is. I mean, this book tells every bit of the details. I mean, it's just amazing. Amazing books, been on the list three times. And it talks about my walk halfway across America to raise awareness for these children. A bill was passed in Tennessee, California, and North Carolina as a result of that walk. It talks about all kinds of stuff, good, sad. You're going to cry. You're going to laugh. You're going to get mad. But ultimately, it's about redemption. It's about grace. It's about forgiveness. And it's about helping and inspiring people. It's a very, very inspiring book. I'd recommend it to anyone who's helping kids, who is not helping kids, who just wants to be inspired, who wants to read something that's real, and, you know, And men, women, kids, it doesn't matter.
And I'll tell you what, Jimmy, if there's anything that this world needs, it's some good inspiration. Where can folks get more information on you and on the partnership with Coke?
JimmyWayne.com.
All right, JimmyWayne.com. Thank you very much, Jimmy. You have a great day, and good luck with tonight's performance, although I don't think you need it, but you have a great day. And I appreciate Jimmy being with us. It is 125 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.